بسم پدر پسر بستان بیشتر بسرات وقتی بنام دستانی هم از دیس و اسواری دیگو رو همه بزنی نگه سرس و سمی برگی بسرده هم اگنه تمنام بسیار زمان زمان سلطه چپسی سمده تانده تزمه سویگی رو بنامان Sweetie, tell me what I was supposed to be done during the tillers. I am the book of my own, the dirty shop and dirty card. One is a cup of tubers, Jack, who was in the way of a Jack. Pretty time, Robin, I go by Sweden. What was the last chapter we read? Does anyone remember the number?
75.
Yeah, 75. So the next one is 88, obviously. This is right at the end of the 10th canto. In the 10th canto, there are 90 chapters. The final one is a summary of Krishna's pastimes, and it summarizes Krishna's glories and some special glories mentioned in the 89th one. There's basically two parts. The second part is when Krishna retrieves, with Arjuna retrieves the son of the Brahmin who's been kidnapped, taken away at the time of birth. And this 88th chapter is also quite glorious. In the Bhagavatam, in the 10th chapter, in many places it has showed the Krishna superiority to the demigods. In the 25th chapter, when Indra pours down so much rain on the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna lifts Covadan Hill and thereby gives the residents of Vrindavan all shelter from Indra. And then later on in the 28th chapter, Varunadev offers his respects to Krishna. On the 27th, Indra comes and offers his respects to Krishna too. And in many places, Brahma offers his respects in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto to Krishna. And also in these chapters, first Lord Shiva offers his respects. And then finally, in the 89th chapter, even Lord Mahavishnu offers his respects to Krishna. This is, the pastimes are so wonderful, but theologically, Krishna is being established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this chapter, very interestingly, has to be one of the cutest stories in the Bhagavatam, too. So this is how it begins. King Prakrit said, "Those demigods, demons, and humans who worship Lord Shiva, who is a strict renunciant, usually enjoy wealth and sense gratification, while the worshippers of the Supreme Lord Hari, the husband of the goddess of fortune, they do not enjoy in that way. We wish to properly understand this matter." So Maharaj Prakrit is asking Sukadeva. "We wish to properly understand this matter, which greatly puzzles us. Indeed, the results attained by the worshippers of those two lords of opposite character," because Lord Shiva is completely renounced, living practically naked under a tree, smearing his body with ashes, having no home in that sense. And Krishna, we've heard, lived in 16,108 palaces in Dwarka, but yet the devotees of Lord Shiva can become wealthy by his grace. And on the other hand, the devotees of Lord Vishnu, well, they get enough. Sometimes, of course, like we saw this with Prabhupada, that he was saying that when someone is very, very ready to serve Krishna, and we saw that with Maharaj Yudhisthira too, in the Rajasuya sacrifice, when someone is extremely pure, then all the wealth is, that they have is not seen. They don't see that. They don't view that as their wealth. And they're not seeing even the charity that they give as, here, I'm giving something of mine for your pleasure, like Bali Maharaj did for Lord Vamadev. But rather, they see that this is Krishna's wealth and he's put it in my hands and let me use it in his service properly. But most people, when they get, when too much wealth comes within their grasp, there's a tendency to become proud. And pride and devotion to Krishna are in opposition. They cannot, they don't work well together. Mahaprabhu, of course, said, Trinada Bhusanichena. So saying, look at the examples he uses for the devotees to emulate grass and trees. What humble existences grass and trees have. The grass, for being stepped on, doesn't complain. That's what its business is, practically speaking. And then there's trees, people cut it, people take its fruits, people chop it down, use its bark, use its roots, its own body, every part of it is used. People use it as they like when it's living. People get shade from it, people get shelter from the rain from it. And they just give and they don't complain, whether it's hot, whether it's rainy, whether it's cold. They don't complain. And they keep giving. So there's a tendency for someone who has wealth to get proud. So therefore Krishna is very careful how he deals with his devotees in this regard. But the devotees are always taken care of. But the devotees don't care. Is what it means to be a devotee, really caring only for one thing, and that's the pleasure of Krishna, the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. This is the natural position of the living entity. It's somewhat artificial until we have love for Krishna, but that's what it really means to be a devotee. It's natural. When there's love for Krishna, one only cares for him. That's the meaning of love. So Maharaj Prakrit is asking this question here. There will be some more explanation. We wish to properly understand this matter, which greatly puzzles us. Indeed, the results attained by the worshippers of these two lords of opposite characters are contrary to what one would expect. The preceding chapter ended with a recommendation that one should always meditate on Lord Hari, the bestower of liberation. It means the last chapter is the prayers about personified Vedas, which is a long and wonderful chapter. In this regard, Maharaj Prakrit here expresses a common fear among ordinary people that by becoming a devotee of Lord Vishnu, one will lose his wealth and social status. For the benefit of such persons of little faith, King Prakrit requests Sri Sukadeva Goswami to explain an apparent paradox. Lord Shiva, who lives like a beggar without even a house to call his own, makes his devotees rich and powerful. While Lord Vishnu, the omnipotent possessor of all that exists, often reduces his servants to abject poverty. What does abject mean? Complete. Full. Sukadeva Goswami will respond with reasoned explanations and an ancient account concerning the demon Vrika. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material energy, manifesting himself in three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. He thus embodies the threefold principles of material ego in goodness, passion, and ignorance. So this is Lord Shiva's position. He embodies, he's the personification of false ego, material ego. What does false ego mean? That sense that every conditioned soul has of being separate from Krishna. It's quite artificial. But there's a sense of existence that I exist separately from Krishna, that I have an independent existence from Krishna. And of course, there's so many things attached to that false ego. depending upon the modes of material nature. If someone is, if the soul is conditioned by the mode of ignorance, he acts in one way, conditioned by passion in another, and by goodness, if he's conditioned, he acts in still another. But yet, common to all these is that that sense of being separate, but not only sense of being separate, but false ego is never innocent, just like I feel separate from Krishna, but rather false ego is an aversion to surrender to Krishna, and that's the cause of false ego. And even one of the proofs of this is not proofs, but one of the manifestations of this, how the conditioned soul would rather do anything than serve and be surrendered to Krishna and admit and live in his dependence on Krishna, that he would, even if he's very spiritually inclined and not even interested in material life, will tend to be an impersonalist. He'd rather become God than surrender to him. So that's, Prabhupada would call that the last snare or trap of Maya, that tendency to become God. Even though you don't care about the material world, but you want to lose your, you'd rather lose your identity, not exist practically speaking, because that's what the impersonal realization is. It's non-existence of the self. No feeling of I exist, I am. So it's removal of the false ego, but being completely subservient to a different kind of false ego, in one sense, of I'd rather do anything, even stop existing, than become a servant of God, of Krishna. So Lord Shiva is the Lord of false ego, and its three different manifestations. Maharaj Prakrit continues. The 16 elements have evolved as transformations of that false ego. This is described especially in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. When a devotee of Lord Shiva, from the false ego and the mode of ignorance, the material elements arise from false ego and the mode of passion. The intelligence arrives, and I think that in some other place. False ego and the mode of ignorance. This is talking about the creation. In the third canto. There's a whole, quite a detailed description of how there's something called pradhan, which means the unmanifested primal elements. And when the Lord glances at that, and his glance contains the living entities, and that pradhan begins to manifest. It has everything in it, but it's undifferentiated. It's not at this. It's not primate. It's not nothing is manifest from it. All the ingredients, like the ingrediental, unmanifested ingrediental cause, and then by the potency of the Lord's glance with the living entities and karma, mixing with time, then that starts stirring everything, and then based on that, variety begins to manifest, first going from subtle to gross. So the manifestation starts with false ego mixing with the three modes of material nature. Ahankar, false ego, false sense of existence, mixing with the three modes of material nature. And as it mixes with the three, false ego mixing with goodness creates the mind. And then as all these then gradually coming down in ignorance, mixing with the sense objects, then the senses, and then an element comes out, and then everything springs from that, going from subtle to gross, the finer one being earth itself with its sense object of fragrance, and its sense of course the nose. So Lord Shiva is the Lord of false ego. He's the predominating deity of false ego. Actually, the predominating deity of false ego is Lord Sankarsana. and let's see, as a devotee of Sankarsan. So the 60 elements have evolved the transformations of that false ego. When a devotee of Lord Shiva worships his manifestation in any one of these elements, the devotee obtains all sorts of corresponding enjoyable opulence. Because again, poverty is the predominating deity. She's Mahamaya, Durga. So she controls the material elements, the feminine force. Controls the material elements, so therefore, when one worships Lord Shiva, she will tend to award one out of her pleasure some material opulences. But those material opulences, which are what people want, don't turn out to be the best of friends. Material potency, being able to control material potency, turned out to be the cause of our ruination. So that's what the pastime, the cute pastime, is going to describe. So Lord Shiva's benedictions turn out to be our undoing. Five. Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. Purport. Lord Vishnu is situated in his own transcendental position, beyond the material energy. Why, therefore, should his worship bear the fruit of material opulence? The real fruit of worshipping Lord Vishnu is transcendental knowledge. Thus Lord Vishnu's worshipper gains the eye of transcendental knowledge instead of being blinded by material assets. The Lord being the detached witness of the material creation, his devotees also become aloof from the interactions of the Lord's inferior energy. Srila Sridhar Swami cites the following passage from the Vedic literature. So there's a group of verses that I won't read the Sanskrit, I'll just read the English. When the absolute reality associates with the modes of nature, he assumes different kinds of form in this world, according to whether his spiritual qualities are manifest or not. Thus he acts just like a reflection, and it's further secondary reflection. The modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, whose individual natures are peaceful, violent, and foolish, are personally regulated by Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, respectfully. Lord Vishnu's peaceful mode of goodness does not differ substantially from his original spiritual qualities, although it is only a partial manifestation of them within this world. Thus Lord Vishnu's mode of goodness is never tainted by agitation and passion or delusion and ignorance. By the modes of passion and ignorance, on the other hand, the original spiritual qualities of Lord Brahma and Lord Rudra are obscured, covered. Thus these spiritual qualities appear only partially as separated material qualities. Therefore, focusing one's consciousness upon Lord Vishnu, the embodiment of all goodness, leads one to liberation. Thus God consciousness also generates material success as a byproduct, but its proper nature is pure spiritual ecstasy. According to their modes of worship, devotees of Brahma, Rudra, and other demigods obtain the limited success of material opulence. Eventually they may possibly become qualified for full liberation. The same idea is echoed in the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23. Shayam Sitatra Kalu Satvatanor Nrinam Siu. Of these three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. He continues, your grandfather, King Yudhisthira, after completing his Ashwamedha sacrifices, asked Lord Achyuta this very same question while hearing the Lord's explanation of religious principles. So that I think the Aswamedha sacrifices that took place just after Yudhisthira was enthroned as the king after the Battle of Kurukshetra, reinstalled as the king after the Battle of Kurukshetra. He asked Krishna this question, why is it? Because look what happened to him. They were such, the Pandavas were such devotees of Krishna, and they ended up with so many problems for so many years. They were exiled, they had to suffer such humiliations. They were living as servants in the court of Araha. So many difficulties they were in. Of course, each time Krishna protected them. But it's interesting how Yudhisthira asked that question, what's going on? You know, you're the Supreme Lord, you're the goddess of fortune herself. Is your consort. Lakshmi is your consort. So why is it that the devotees of Shiva gain their opulences and the devotees of Vishnu sometimes don't? Although it's so interesting how we just read just a few chapters earlier how Yudhisthira was performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. But that happened after. So this question came, it seems, directly after the Pandavas' great period of suffering. This question pleased Sri Krishna, so he asked Krishna himself. The king's lord and master, who had descended into the family of Jaru for the purpose of bestowing the highest good on all men. The Lord replied as follows, as the king eagerly listened. Because he said, you know, when we begin chanting Hare Krishna, we have a dream that maybe even the devotees tell us that we just chant. Everything will be just fine. So we're thinking, we tend to think that everything will be fine on the material level, and we become disappointed. And this is because we're coming from a materialistic background, and this is the way that so many religionists teach and preach and understand. I once saw a bumper sticker in the United States many years ago. It said, "The Lord wants you to be." Something, maybe successful or something in the essence, successful, or had lines through it which meant the dollar sign. So he wants you to succeed materially. That's what he wants. That's not the Krishna conscious philosophy, by the way. As we find out in time, that different things happen. You break your neck. Who knows what's going to happen? But the devotees, amazingly enough, can transcend this world due to their attachment to him, and this is really shown in it's going to be shown here to some degree, but on a different level it's shown with the story of the Vidyadhara, who was Chitraketu when he was cursed by Parvati to become a demon, and he took it. He said, okay. And Lord Shiva said to Parvati, do you see the greatness of the Lord's devotees? Now do you understand? Apitu yata darshanam. That's swaga, heaven. Apavaga, liberation. Narak means hell even. Apitu yata darshanam. It's all the same to them. They don't care. They have something so great and so deep. They're so fixed in that, that what's going on externally doesn't affect them internally. Just see the greatness of the devotees. And we could also, when we think in that, from that point of view, we think, just see how far I have to go to actually become a devotee. But it means fixedness. That's the beginning of it, a complete fixedness. And you actually see this in all religious traditions, true religious traditions, that the practitioners, you know, the deepest of the saints and sadhus, beyond this material world. So even though they can be in the camp of the impersonalist, but the greatest strength, the greatest ones who are beyond any material world conception, or we see this in the lives of six Goswamis, they're so fixed due to the depth, because so fixed means so deep, like the depth of the tree's roots. So even in a great storm, a powerful tree has its roots so deep, and it can move with the winds of life. That's why Prabhupada once was walking by the Pacific Ocean, and Pacific literally means peaceful. So he said to the devotees, why is the ocean peaceful? Prabhupada then said, because it is deep. So, like an ocean, and even if there is some disturbance on the surface, and there is, even in the most peaceful ocean, has its stormy days. But you just go below the surface and it's unagitated. That means the relationship with Krishna is fixed and thick. So the Lord replied to this question as the king eagerly listened. So this is very famous. Now Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has some incredible comments on this. Let's see how much of it is included here. And then after that he tells the cutest of pastimes. But first there's the philosophy. So Krishna himself replied, Yasyaham Anugrahami. Yasyaham means Yasya, to whom, aham, I, Anugrahami means give mercy or favor. Harisha, Hari means take away. Harisha Taddhanam. Dhanam means wealth. His wealth. I take away his wealth. To whom I want to show mercy. Shanai. Gradually. So, so Krishna, Srila Vyasadeva Sukadeva, finally kindly spoke this at the 88th chapter, because if they spoke this right in the beginning, we would just close the book and join somewhere else. God wants you to be successful, whatever. Alisha Tadanam Shanai. Gradually, Shanai, Shanai means gradually, gradually. Because that's what it's not possible to maintain one's wealth in this world. That's the reality of the situation, because death confronts everyone. Old age confronts everyone. So we have to lose it. It has to be taken from us. So the devotees learn how to experience the shelter in Krishna, so that they alone will really be prepared at the time when it's time to depart this world, and it's unavoidable. This just ruins everything. Death, the grim reaper, the great destroyer, Kalos Mendokachaya created, just ruins everything, all our plans. Whatever we've accumulated, it rips us from them, our body leaves us. Usually we talk in terms of leaving our body, but in the teachings of Prabhupada, one part we said, the body leaves us. In the story of Paranjana, it is like that. So Harisha, Tadanam Sinai, gradually take away his Dhanam. So, obviously, it happens to everyone. But the devotees, it's Krishna who does it, not the material nature. The toe, Adhanam. And then, Tata means then, Adhanam. So Dhanam means wealth, Adhanam means when he's poor. Tyajanti, Tyaja means gives up. Asya, Sajana. All his family members don't like him anymore. They say, they're not taking care of us anymore? Sajana dukkha dukitam. And he suffers distress one after another. This is tasyaham anugrahami harisha. Anugraham, this is when I show him mercy. Imagine if he's angry at someone. So the devotees really have a unique way of looking at this world. They learn this amazing art of how to see Krishna's mercy even in difficulty. In the Bible, there's a story about Job. It's such an amazing story. Have you ever read it?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a wild story, isn't it?
He's also a devotee.
Huh?
He's also a devotee.
It's an amazing story. Mm-hmm. The way it's told in the Bible. Do they have that in the Quran also? Something about Job?
I've never heard of it.
Because, there's like the devil in the Bible. Also in Islam, they have a devil, yeah?
Yeah. Shaitan.
What's his name?
Shaitan.
Oh, yeah.
Shaitan.
Yeah. So he's the bad guy who whispers all kinds of bad things in your ear, tells you to do all the wrong things. It's very different, actually, from the concept of Maya, actually, because the Maya is the reflection of Krishna, of Krishna's pleasure potency, actually, and her purpose is rectification. It's one of her main purposes, and she's not outside the Lord. She's not a fallen angel who somehow has escaped God's kingdom or something. He's trying to set up a revolutionary government somewhere. Maya is an asset hiding out in the hills of the material world, growing beards and eating chickens and gathering guns. Not like that. But in Job, the devil approaches God and says that no one really is a devotee, no one's really a true worshiper or anything like that. He said, yes, there is. Nah. And he says, Job is. And he said, if you put a little pressure on him, you'll see he'll crack. He'll give up all his devotion, and instead of loving you, he'll curse you. If you take away the things that in this world he's attached to, because he's a wealthy person. So, it's like when children say, this is how it's told in a funny way, not funny, especially for Job. But it's almost as if he says, God said, he is a devotee. And the devil said, he's not. He is, he's not. And they said, you want to bet? That's what they say in the West, too, in the United States. You want to bet? And if you have a disagreement, okay, I'll prove it to you. So then God... And of course, how could he have a conversation with the devil even if he's not a person? So then he starts giving him trouble, Job trouble, and more trouble, and more trouble, and gradually takes everything away from him. And then by the end he has nothing, he has no health, he's lost his family, he's lost his wealth, but he doesn't crack, he doesn't give up his devotion. And then, but finally the end is quite interesting. So near the end he starts asking, you know, why, he's praying and praying, why is this happening to me, why is this happening to me? You know, I've done everything right. All these people are, you know, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? And then God comes down, not as a blue boy playing his flute with his cows, and not as an old man with a beard, and not as a burning bush, but he comes down as, do you remember what he comes down? A whirlwind, like Trinavarta, something like that. And yes, the question was, why has this happened to me? Why has you done this to me? You're the Supreme Controller, and I've been so faithful to you. Why have you done this? And the answer is, I am the Supreme Lord. I control the sun. I control the moon. I do this. I control time. And he doesn't even... doesn't it all say that I just made a bet with the devil or because you did something wrong? He said, I'm the Supreme Lord. You can't ask why. Basically, he says, it's none of your business. This is tiny, insignificant soul. What do you think? He doesn't give a purport even like that. He just talks about his own power, and which one implies means the insignificance of the... of everyone else, you just are insignificant. Like an ant asking why. Don't be so arrogant. Doesn't even address the question. And then after he passed the test, then he gives him back all his wealth and everything. Interesting. He doesn't give him back his old wife. He gives him a new one. He already took her away. Why are you laughing? It's funny.
Maybe for him it was better.
Huh?
Maybe it was better for him.
Maybe. So here's the translation here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. It's also really interesting in the story of Job, when people come and preach to him, too, in the middle of all the suffering, and the preaching is all, it's all, you know, you're really suffering, and someone said, don't worry, it'll be okay, you know, the last thing you want to hear. You know, things like that, sort of superficial preaching. Mm. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. And I'm going to read the verses on this, and then there's a long purport. When he becomes frustrated in his attempts to make money and instead befriends my devotees, then I bestow my special mercy upon him. A person who has thus become sober, sober means really seeing things in the proper perspective, not intoxicated by thinking these external superficial things are going to bring happiness. So a person who thus becomes sober, intoxicated person, he loses his perspective on reality. He doesn't see things accurately. So a person who has thus become sober, he realizes the nature of the material world, fully realizes the Absolute as the highest truth in the association of the devotees. So a person who has thus become sober fully realizes the Absolute truth, the Absolute is the highest truth, because if we're intoxicated by Maya and attached and enamored by the things of this world, we can't actually realize the Absolute truth because our consciousness is entangled on this lower level. So a person who has thus become sober fully realizes the absolute as the highest truth, the most subtle and perfect manifestation of spirit, the transcendental existence without end. In this way, realizing that the supreme truth is the foundation of his own existence, he is freed from the cycle of material life. He realizes that his consciousness is everything. He himself rests on the foundation of the absolute truth, that he has no existence outside of Krishna's mercy. He's resting upon Krishna. So whether one is satisfied with that or not, that is reality. And whether one is satisfied with that fact or not, has to do with one's own consciousness. Prabhupada had given the example of a cat. He carries the mouse in his teeth and he carries his own kitten in his teeth. So one, the kitten experiences happiness, and the mouse experiences terror. Rightfully so, because it means his death. So we are all carried by the cat of Krishna. And if we are beloveds of Krishna consciously, then we are satisfied with that and accept whatever happens. And this has already been stated by Lord Brahma, Tateyano Kampamsa Samachimano, seeing Krishna's mercy in all that occurs and all that exists, seeing Krishna in it, seeing Krishna as the foundation of all existence, in every particle of existence, in every thing that exists, seeing nothing as separate from him. This very, very deep Krishna consciousness is required to be actually a devotee and not being fearful in any circumstance. So therefore a devotee of Tuliyata Darsana, Narayana Parayana, Nakutaschana Bibhiti, he experiences no fear. That much faith, that much trust. And then one can confront the great open door known as death fearlessly, because one is, sees himself being carried to that door by Krishna, and knowing that Krishna is always with him, and he's the foundation of everything, even of time, even of death. Krishna says that time I am. So this is philosophy. Mrityum Janle Hoy, the philosophy, the depth of our realization of the philosophy is tested at the time of leaving this world. Life is meant for practicing. So Krishna continues, because I'm difficult to worship, people generally avoid me and instead worship other deities who are quickly satisfied. When people receive kingly opulence from these deities, they become arrogant, intoxicated with pride, and neglectful of their duties. They dare to offend even the demigods who have bestowed benedictions upon them. So pride causes us, as the English expression, to bite the hand that feeds us even. So he's going to tell a story like that. You know that expression?
Oh, I know that story.
Oh, you know the story, you know the expression?
English. Mm. Oh, yes.
Bite the hand that feeds us.
In that's English, a dog. They have like something that you cut off the branch to sit on.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's gross. Yeah, same. Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and others are able to curse or bless. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are very quickly to curse or bestow benedictions, my dear king, but the infallible Supreme Lord is not. So, okay, so now here comes the story of the demon whose name is Vrikasura. It's such a cute story. But before, let us hear this purport to the verse Yasyaham Anugrahami. Yasya again means Aham means I, whom I favor, Anugrahami, favor or give mercy. Harishya, take away Tandanam Shanai, gradually take away out of my mercy, take away his love. So people don't like that, but gradually he takes away even everyone's body. Tato Adanam Tyajantyasya, when he takes away, then no one likes us anymore. No one likes a poverty-stricken man. There's also in the 11th canto, there's another story of the Brahmana from Avantipur. Also has this problem. And he sees it, he loses everything, but he learns to see Krishna's mercy in it, and he's happy in every circumstance. Because when our happiness comes from matter, that means, by definition, we'll be happy, miserable, happy, miserable, happy, miserable. Not even just only miserable, but happy, miserable. If we're only miserable, we'd get used to it and be happy being miserable. So here's the purport to this. Devotees of the Supreme Lord experience both happiness and distress, not as consequences of material work, but as incidental effects of their loving reciprocation with the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sri Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, his definitive treatise on the process of devotional service, explains how a Vaishnava is relieved of all karmic reactions, including those that have not yet begun to manifest, aparabdha, those that are about to manifest, kuta, those that are barely manifesting, bija, and those that have fully manifested, parabdha. As a lotus gradually loses its many petals, so a person who takes shelter of devotional service has all his karmic reactions destroyed. That devotional service to Lord Krishna eradicates all karmic reactions is confirmed in this passage of the Gopal Tapani Shruti. Bhaktir asya bhajanam tad iha mutra padi Naras yena musmin mana kalpanam etareva naish karmyam. Devotional service is the process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. It consists of fixing the mind upon him by becoming disinterested in all material designations, both in this life and the next. It results in the dissolution of all karma. While it is certainly true that those who practice devotional service remain in material bodies and in apparently material situations for some time, this is simply an expression of the inconceivable mercy of the Lord, who bestows the fruits of devotion only when it has become pure. The Supreme Lord bestows the fruits of devotion only when it has become pure. In every stage of devotion, however, the Lord watches over his devotee and sees to the gradual elimination of his karma. Thus, despite the fact that the happiness and distress that devotees experience resemble ordinary karmic reactions, they are in fact given by the Lord himself. As the Bhagavatam 10.87.40 states, Bhavad Uta Shubha Shubhayo, Shubha Shubhayo, a mature devotee recognizes the superficial good and bad conditions he encounters as signs of the direct guidance of his ever well-wishing Lord. What do you think of this?
that is very high. And then how does it apply when you can understand it, you know, on a lesser, you know,
well,
situation, less situated?
Well, I mean, so.
I guess I mean, how do you see what happens in distress when you're not on a platform? Right?
Yeah, well, you don't see it, though, we see it inaccurately, and therefore we suffer. We see it as due to my own self, or we see it as mostly due to others, and this and that, but actually it's Krishna purifying us, and we learn our lessons.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
I pray to Krishna that I never do that again.
Yeah.
So one question is, why does Krishna make it so hard? Make it such a high standard? Because the goal is so high.
Yeah.
The goal is Goloka Vrindavan. Not a cheap thing. We can't go in without a false ego. That we have to leave in the material world. We won't finish all the purport now, we're just reading actually not even a third of it. Too late. But we shall continue if it's morning tomorrow. Very interesting topic, though.
Very.
Easy to talk about.
Mm.
Easy to preach to others about.
Mm. Hard to
apply.
To the
But at the time of death, what good will anything else do?
Has to be applied.
So we know what the issues are. We know what the tests are. To keep it in mind, always. And this point is always applicable because everyone is always going through something or another. Until we're on the highest of highest levels, we have to become more purified. And what it means is two parts of it. One is giving up and one is holding on. Letting go and holding on are the different levels. So we have to learn both. So both are what we're learning, actually. So what you said, your question is, what if you're not on that level? So it means I'm either holding on to something I shouldn't be holding on to, or not holding on to someone that I should be holding on to.
Yeah.
So, both. Or both. Yeah. It is. It's always both.
Concomitantly both.
Huh?
Yeah.
So therefore, when we're not on that level, we suffer by Krishna's mercy the pains of one who's attached to the material world and not attached to Krishna. But it's by Krishna's mercy because we hear the philosophy, and then we know what we should be doing, even though we're not capable of doing it. And gradually, we move towards it, or quickly, depending upon who we are and what we've done in our previous lives.
Yeah.
See, and this also answers, like in other religions who don't accept reincarnation, it makes it so difficult, more difficult, because the devotee is supposed to, he has to see that there's something, this is happening to me and not happening to others. So if I can't see that I've done something in a previous time that Krishna is so kindly minimizing, if I don't see it like that, then it's all just him giving it to me out of his whimsy, not whimsy, in the form of his whirlpool, and, you know, don't ask why it's happening. It's actually much harder to deal with philosophically if you have a philosophical mind.
Absolute injustice.
Yeah, absolute injustice. Protest. I once, I remember when after I started chanting, and I was still living in New York, and New York at least has intelligent graffiti and clever graffiti. There was someone on the subway wall. And it was really, it was during the 60s, you know, that everyone would be protesting this and protesting that, abolish this, abolish that. So there was someone who had written on the subway, abolish compulsory reincarnation.
Believe in reincarnation.
That's funny, yeah. It's not compulsory, but anyway, it's funny. Get a sense of humor, at least. That's real. That's a real New York type of a thing.
Someone might ask, okay, what's going on in the case of a non-devotee receiving happiness and distress is under the modes of nature and the laws of karma.
Just karma.
Okay.
That's samoham sabhabhutesu namedve sostinapriya.
Yeah, right. And then here we're hearing the highest principles applying to pure to the pure devotee.
No, not even pure devotee. Because a pure devotee doesn't have to. He's not taking medicine anymore. He's developing
right.
His love, but as opposed to all devotees, even the beginners.
Mm.
That's what Van Ramachandra says. Sakadeva Bhavanam Yas Tava Smriti. Tava Smriti. Yeah, okay, so everyone think about it, because I don't want to go late tonight. But we can talk about it for at least until you leave. Yeah. But then, anyway, at least there'll be a cute story at the end. It's something to really think about.
Yeah.
Usually we forget about it very quickly.
Mm.
I see this. Such a wonderful report to see Krishna's mercy in things, but if you don't have the depth of devotion, then quickly this point goes.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Tomorrow we shall continue, because someone